Hi folks, and welcome to Kaput Radio. My name is Martin, and with this podcast I'd like to present some selected poetry from the Nimbin Poetry World Cup 2016, recently held in Nimbin on the weekend of the 6th and 7th of August. Presented here are David Hallett, followed by Len Martin, then followed by Tug Dumley. There is some explicit language and strong Australian colloquial. You see, my accent is German, so what? Don't get scared, it's not bombs, but just words. As incendiary they may be, welcome to the show.
Shame, burning a hole through my hand. My strands of DNA are bleeding like Fukushima, still bleeding. Tuna's off, salmon's off. A Greek chorus of humpback whales is singing, what the fuck? In the flush of dead batteries and plastic bags, but I digress. Screen check, screen bloody check. The screens are screaming, too much information. Ringtone, I have to take this call. Ringtone, I have to take that call. Ringtone, I have to take this. You're breaking up your break. I'm breaking up. I'm out of range. Screen check. My Googled life. My memories are a USB stick, which I've lost. Memories of four pennies, a red telephone box. Press button A, press button B for refund. Memories of smoke signals, talking drums, just talking. But I digress. Get with the program, tick the box. It's the year of the monkeys on mobile phones. Everyone is looking down, down, down. Screen check, screen check, screen check. I have to take this. The second poem is a short poem that I wrote on the fated 25th of April. And this poem relates to this day's anniversary, the 7th of August, my birthday, an event that has haunted me on my birthday for many, many years. Early on the morning of the 7th, 101 years ago, in an act of complete madness, row after row of Australian soldiers charged across a piece of dirt, literally, literally the size of a tennis court, straight into nests of machine guns. An act that has been shockingly, proudly and madly used to define our nation. This poem is titled, "The Anzac Spirit was poorly fed, badly led, marched into disaster and defeat. Gallipoli, Fromelles, Greece, Crete, Korea, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq. The Anzac spirit, bookended by Boer War and bombing Syria, under the rags of English flags, American flags, and Anzac Day, a macabre Day of the Dead beach carnival, a bayonet mateship of men huddling in holes, like good sportsmen, awaiting the ref's whistle, then charge. The final poem is a piece that I've been working on for the last 3 months, and it is titled Recycling Dead Batteries at Aldi. The battery bin is an overflow sideshow under the bright neon and the scrubbed walls. The fat family is exploding at the checkout. The trolleys aren't big enough. They're shouting down their phones, bananas $1.99, turkey mince $3.99. Dead Syrians roll in the waves of Lesbos. We are bombing Syria. Nobody mentions this. It is Mother's Day. Bombs rain on Yemen, South Somalia, Sudan, Ukraine. Refugee children pace behind the thorns of our barbed wire. Nobody mentions this. It is Mother's Day. It's a beautiful market day. Devonshire tea. Russia bombs a refugee camp. America bombs an Afghan hospital. ISIS U-tubes are beheading. More dead batteries. The fat family still shouting. Pet grooming hairdryer, $29.99. Weird science activity kits, $9.99. With eyes screwed shut. Pawns in a Game of Thrones. In a South Sea bubble. We seem so rich. Even the poorest seem rich. We sit in cafes, on smartphones, texting across the table. Please pass the sugar. Please pass the salt. And it's Grand Finals Day, Mad Monday, Good Friday, Race Day, Show Day, Birthdays, Happy Days. With a music score by John Williams. Dinosaurs by Spielberg. Desert by My Kitchen Rules. Education by Google. Surveillance by Facebook. President by Twitter. By free download. Dead batteries roll across the Aldi floor. Up on the muted screen, another godforsaken battle in the godforsaken history of God. Fighting over sandstorms. A Sunni sandstorm versus a Shia sandstorm. Poison foams from the battery bin, and we are gifted an election. We are fodder to madmen in suits parroting to the cameras. Jobs and growth, jobs and growth, jobs and growth. As wild winds and wild waters ravage the coast. High up on the ridge, forest bends in the wind in deepest scarlet light before night thickens and the sky is filled with diamonds. My world is melting. My mind is blowing away with nothing to catch me save my children, my lover, and in the crosshairs, the wide blue eyes of my tiny grandson searching for some hope in these desperate words.
Expensive toys, ever clever corporate ploys to help the human race bugger up the bloody place, consuming more and more and more, so corporate profits soar and soar and soar. More opiates for the masses to take our minds off all the hashes that we humans make. The real reality is there for all to see, and best of all, of course, it's free. They say we've senses five: sight, hearing, taste, olfaction, touch. But wait, there's many, many more. A feeling really, really sore. Essential, oft unwanted sense of pain. The sense of warmth and chill. And feeling really, really ill. An itch, sometimes an awful bitch. A sense of movement, balance, limb position, body shape. Of when our heads is up our arse. A sense in politicians all too sparse. So, I really, really feel virtual reality will feel unreal compared with what's around us here. I've stood naked in the morning sun, irradiated. Golden mist swirled round the rocks, and frost lay still in sheltered spots. My skin was warmed, my feet were cooled in textured earth beneath. A fleeting breeze caressed me, my fingertips reminding of the feel of many things. I've stood naked in the summer night, in underneath innumerable galaxies of stars and light, illuminated from the very edge of time, infinity. The centre of the universe, the centre of the galaxy was overhead. Philosophy poured down on me. I almost drowned, but saved myself by gazing down to contemplate the close infinity of sand and sea and cells and life and consciousness on this, our small and wondrous lonely globe. I've stood naked in the autumn sun, hot air scorching, gum haze blue, and all around could hear, see, smell my kin, all living things, plants, birds and beasts, microbes and mold, all sharing in this vast great web, community of life. I share their breath, their flesh, their very being. Oh, time's great span, we all have come from them. And they are still a great part of us, and we will all return to them, dissolve, disperse in them, and be at one with them, our kin. And yes, their sense is even more, a sense of justice for the poor, a moral sense of empathy, perhaps the most intense, that all too brave, orgasmic sense. Ah, and then the senses, bringing balm of peace and beauty, love and calm. The most important sense of self that may be lost as we grow old, as memories fade with time's cruel path. Can I remember my own past reality? Yeah, this is an old bloke's poem, not attractive to the young, signalling as it does what they'll become. He'll laugh remembering that, he said. And then I remembered that he's dead, himself a memory, and fading fast as memories do. My memory of him, that is. For his all leaked into the never-never when his white and grey bits turned to mush, as mine will too when my turn comes. Her remembrances, sir, once shared, now mine alone for those who shared are long since gone. So many memories now unique to me for what brief time remains. What are we without our memories? For memories define us. Each ego just a bunch of clever neurons resonating what we were and did just now and what we did and were a million years ago. Clever neurons, bloody clever, doing what they do, preserving the ephemeral in ways mysterious, dynamically electrochemical. Virtual reality of the past. The present instant instantaneously has passed. Is past, is in the past that just went past. A memory, all too soon, that may or may not last to a final sting of our brains. Oh, how profound. Repeat after me loudly. Oh, how profound. And again.
Oh, how profound.
And somewhat fainter. Oh, how profound. Just like a fading echo, as memories are fading echoes of our lives. Virtual realities of all our pasts. Alas, for some, even quite young, can be an ever-deepening sense of gloom, of doom, of worthlessness, unworthiness, that generates the blackness of black dog and sometimes suicide. Right here in Nimbin Town, I still ask why he went that way, so young and talented, surely blessed by the gods, with bounteous joys of life ahead. Alas, I do not know the why of he, but I do know the why of me. Booze and guilt spun an ever-darkening quilt. So twice I tried suicide, but twice was saved. But friends of mine were not. Some black is beautiful, but not the black when misery descends. Black band so tight around one's head. Black pit in which one sinks. Black walls cut off. All hope. No words of love can pierce these walls, and so a dark despair. The future, black infinity, no joy, no hope, no ending! And so, thoughts of other, seeming softer black, a velvet black that beckons, offers respite, freedom from despair, so welcoming it seems, to cast all anguish, care, and worry past. To sink, perchance, to sink into an everlasting dreamless sleep of soft, black, velvet death. A perfect everlasting black. Oh, to end the torment! Oh, so it seems. And so for some, they go. Perhaps because of sexuality or race, they had no sense of place, no sense of being wanted, of belonging, a sense that's needed for contented life. Yes, sense of place, to know one's place. I know me place, Gov. No, not that place. A sense of this place. A sense of all that's gone before in this place. A sense of history in this place. A sense of her story in this place. A sense of their story of this place. A sense of our story of this place. A sense of belonging. in this place. But most of us are displaced from our birthplace, but voluntarily. Something that we chose to do, we lucky few. But while we're graced by our fond sense of this place, we cannot fail to face the current millions violently displaced, as oft has happened to the human race. Complete loss of their sense of place. And so too those that graced this place for 50,000 years or more, displaced and still remaining so in some dark purgatorial space, black dog of decimating, a shameless national disgrace. So let us lucky few have this wonderful sense of this place, share this space, for we live in the rainbow country, on the land of the Bunjalung, and we'll care for the place as they did if we can, if we can. What's needed is not a virtual reality. We need a virtuous reality. Thank you.
And fables spun around a thousand tables. Woolly yarns stretched so tight, they span this land from cape to bite. Shaggy tales, Columbus crocs, enough bullshit to fill air's rock, but none excite the kind of fever as the legend of Lassiter's reefer. Seems way back in 73, this bloke was found off his tree, somewhere in the vexed vicinity of Nimbin, Lismore and Mullumbimby. The devil's triangle, folks would say, because things went on there weird and strange. Stuff disappeared right under your nose, like little bits of garden hose. Now Lassiter, for it was he, this grizzled hippie off his tree, was found by a farmer in the early hours, preaching to a herd of cows. Rabid, delirious, babbling, mad, ripped as roadkill, naked as, he screeched, "Eureka! Yes, indeed! I got instructed a motherweed! Satan's toothpick, Scooby-Doo, the biggest spliffs you ever knew'd! I seen it straight with my own eyes! A giant joint of King Kong size!" Which is weird, because he normally had a really broad Aussie accent. Well, after a week in the tank, the cops released him as a crank to roam at large, telling his tale to any joker he could bail, until at last, around Nimbin way, he met his mark, found his prey. A crusty shaman read his palm and went and raised the chakra alarm. "Brothers, sisters, as I guessed it, the chosen one has manifested." And so a hardy hippie band struck out for the hinterland. He pushed them hard at healthy trot. "Come on, boys, X marks the pot." Until at break of second day, just as faith was on the wane, through the swirling mist of dawn, in a valley far off born, there she blew in spliffic splendour, Lassiter's reefer royally rendered. Never Coleridge with a pipe could have conjured such a sight. The fabulous fable pallid prize had to be of Zeppelin size. Well, down the hill the party charged towards the marvellous mirage. They reached it, panting, all aslide, knocked it, tapped it, hugged its side. But instead of tally-hos and grass, the thing was made of fiberglass. And as they stood with empty sacks, poised to smack it with an axe, two blokes emerged from a door inside, dressed in khaki shirts and strides. "G'day, fellas. Strike a light. My name's Mal, and this is Mike. Come inside and browse the joint. Feel free to buy at any point." They pulled a rope. A sign unfurled. "Leyland Brothers Reefer World."
after hippies' jaws dropped to a man, the joint was but a hollow sham. A gift shop selling cards and coasters, T-shirts, teaspoons, towels and posters. The only thing it didn't stock was a single skerrick of pot. The hopping hippies howled and gnashed, beat the Leylands to a mash, trashed the joint and looked around, but that bastard Lassiter couldn't be found. Some say he'd licked the giant cane toad or giant mushroom just down the road. But whether or not you're a believer, that's the legend of Lassiter's Reefer.
This is another true story.
This nation's seen some black times, some times of trouble and strife, but none as black as the day the Poets Union went on strike. Comrade Kelly roused the poets to a bloody boil, saying, "Why should we get paid FA for all our sweat and toil? Fair day's pay for a fair day's verse. It's time we showed the nation we're down in pens until such time as we get remuneration." The word was sent out on the wire, proclaiming loud the action. The union battened down the hatches, awaiting the reaction. But finally, when the day came round, instead of an outrage call, the nation rose, the nation yawned, the nation scratched its balls. The airlines flew, the buses ran, the wharves were working to a man. The nation didn't seem that royal, that poetry was off the boil. So poets thronged into the streets, declaiming loud their lack. But people thought them spruikers or Mormons high on crack. Things look grim, so Comrade Kelly said, "It's time they know it. It's time for the final solution. Release the bush poets." The board turned pale and shuddered at the very mention. "But surely," they said, "bush poetry, it's against the Geneva Convention." But soon a rumbling from the country was felt from miles around as a plague of bush poets descended on the town. They came in droves, spouting Banjo Patterson and Lawson, like a Kubrick cockroaches through the city coursing. They deafened all with rhyming couplets and doggerel about the land, odes to horses, sheep and dogs, and odes to Hanrahan. They infested houses and churches, they bred like bloody flies. You couldn't open a cupboard without hearing about fucking gun the guy. They roved in packs, cracking whips. People went insane, falling to their knees to hear a game of droughts and plains. The action seemed to take effect in wearing down the nation, but just to be sure, the bushies went and hijacked TV stations. They barricaded studios, turned cameras on themselves, and broadcast odes to Billy Tea and eucalyptus smells. Hour upon hour of programming produced a hideous shiver, with wall-to-wall bush poets telling the man from Snowy River and Clancy of the Overflow, and the man from Ironbark, and all of a sunburned country from dawn to dusk to dark. The Prime Minister was called in to try and break the picket. After all, the bushies' drone was drowning out the cricket. A meeting with the union examined all the claims. A deal was struck in minutes. The poets won the day. With this one condition that bound the agreement tight, the poets would only get their pay if they promised not to write. And the bushies, they'd get double pay if they didn't open their mouths but piss off back to where they came from, amongst the crows and cows. So that's how poets got the dole. Hush money, if you like. All because of the day the Poets Union went on strike. Thank you.
Thank you for your interest and patience with us Australians twisting the English language to almost unrecognizable forms. And the tweaking, strining and refining was done by David Hallett, Len Martin, and Tuck Dumley. Less tweaked and in clear English, English are other programs available to download if you search for Kaput X Radio. Kaput does spell with two T's. Yes, it does. It's not English, mind you. And by the title and program description on each program page, you will find many other issues represented, some of them satirical, some of them mashup mix style, and some plain presentations. So check it out and enjoy the not-for-profit sharing of people's ideas. My name is Martin, and you certainly can catch me again with more Kaput Radio.